Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, hope everyone had a great American Memorial weekend, an exciting one. Welcome to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, Annie, the radio chick, along with my debonair, my suave, my politically savvy co-host, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Mikey.
Good afternoon, Annie. It is great to be here, and you got on without a hitch. No microphone problems or anything right off the bat, so knock on wood. We'll do that right now. Welcome, everyone. Glad to have you here after a great Memorial Day weekend for this awesome, awesome Tuesday, the 27th of May. I'd like to welcome everyone listening to us all over the world, whether you're downloading us from iTunes or on Breaker, Stitcher, and all the other Kinetic Hi-Fi, everything else that Annie has us intrigued on, and she can, since I'm not hip with the time, she can fill you in on the other things we've done over the weekend. But it is great to be here. As always, want to welcome everyone, and in our chat room, we got such a loyal group of gangsters.
Hipsters. You know, I want to remind everyone that we are simulcast on Kinetic Hi-Fi out of Charleston, South Carolina. We are also being broadcast on Tea Party Facebook. Go over to teapartycommunity.com/Facebook, but without all the BS. We're also on Patriot Radio Network. I managed to get that one out without screwing it up too badly. And you'll find us up on iTunes and everything else. And we're still waiting for confirmation on that special announcement that I have coming up. And hopefully this will be active as of mid-June. And it's going to take the show to a whole new level. But I can't say too much except to say we got an exciting announcement coming up soon. And I want to welcome everyone back. I am finally back in the great state of South Carolina. I arrived here late last night and just shoved all my studio equipment together a little while ago and panicked because my microphone wasn't working. But it is all up and working. And, Mike, you know how every time we do an interview with Doug Briney, something always goes wrong? Always. when we went to do his debut album, the second album, I couldn't play a single song because my system crashed and I couldn't even get back online. Something always happens with him. But this last broadcast we did Friday, and we missed you sorely, and Joe Goldner stood in for you, not a single hitch. Well, actually, his phone dropped off towards the last few minutes, but he got back on just in time, and it went perfect. And I've never, ever had a perfect interview with Doug before, but you know, the angels were looking out for us.
Yeah, maybe I'm a curse. Who knows? But that's great. I'm glad to be there. And hopefully, we have confirmed for Friday, too. We have six guests all running for the House of Representatives in Michigan. But, yep, hopefully everything will get off without a hitch. Also, Annie, as later on next month, when we had the ladies from Michigan on here, the ones who couldn't make it said that they would join us. The mother of the lady who we dedicated the show to, her name was Amanda. I can't think of Amanda's last name, but her mother is Mrs. Orcutt. The mother said that she would actually call in yesterday. I had the great honor of finally meeting her at the Memorial Day Parade, and she said thank you for the dedication. She was planned on calling in, she said, but she just had too many tears in her eyes. And you know what? This is our dedication is just so wonderful. I mean, no show does this but us, not in the way we do it. It just really is. And, you know, let everyone know, this still gets teary for Annie and myself. I mean, there's sometimes you could tell Annie's bawling one sentence into the dedication. I'm thinking, oh, boy. But, I mean, this is, and, you know, what yesterday was all about is the heroes. That's what it's
exactly.
all about.
Exactly. And I put up in the chat room, people may have to scroll up to it, but if they go to Doug Briney, DougBriney, DougBriney.com, starting yesterday, Memorial Day, and all the way through to Labor Day, he has a single release up there for 99 cents. It's called Unsoldier. Every single person that downloads it for 99 cents directly from his website, that 99 cents does not go into his pocket. Not a single penny will go into his pocket. All 99 cents will go directly to veteran causes. And he's working through Bright Star for those veteran causes. And so if everyone is listening out there, tell your friends, you know, email them, put it up on your Facebook page, whatever. Go into the Tea Party community, get a page over there and put it up there. Tell people, go DougBriney.com, download Unknown Soldier, and 99 cents from Memorial Day to Labor Day will go to veteran causes. So we got to do the best we can for the vets. We can't rely on the VA, obviously.
We're going through a horrible here in Kent County, Annie. Annie, you think you're battling the county down in Buford? Here we're a group of veterans have gotten together and they've actually approached me. They're going to ask for a dollar from the taxpayers, and basically, we have more homeless veterans under the age of 30 in our city than any city in the United States. Imagine, I mean, in the VA, we don't want to get into that right now, but that's just what you just said. This is a shame. I mean, that what is happening to our veterans, I mean, just a shame.
It's unacceptable, absolutely unacceptable. And
an 18-year-old who signed up to go into the service. By 25, you know, he's home and homeless and either an alcoholic or in depression or whatever. I mean,
yeah.
That is, you are correct. It is unacceptable.
Absolutely. Well, that said, I had dug into the past and pulled up a dedication for a hero. And everyone knows this man's brother, but no one knows this man. And in fact, when they asked his brother, you know, how you feel about, you know, being a general and your brother serving under you. And he said, the wrong person's the captain. He should be the general, not me. That is how heroic this man was and how he is nothing more than just a little tiny footnote in history. And we cannot allow this to happen. So today's dedication, Mike, if you can pull up the Army theme, this dedication goes to Thomas Ward Custer, U.S. Army, brother of General George Armstrong Custer, who died alongside of him at the Battle of Little Bighorn and was the first double Medal of Honor recipient awardee for his actions during the Civil War when the award was created. One of only 19 honorees to have received two Medal of Honors, and the first one to receive it. And this is taken partly from Wikipedia. He was born in New Rumley, Ohio, the third son of Emil and Marie Custer. He enlisted in the Union Army in September 1861 at the age of 16 and served in the early campaigns of the Civil War as a private in the 21st Ohio Volunteer Infantry. Now, I will make a note here that he did try to enlist at the age of 15, but it was discovered and he was rejected. So as soon as he turned 16, he enlisted. He saw action in numerous battles, including Stones River, Missionary Ridge, and the Atlantic Campaign. He mustered out in October 1864 as a corporal. He was commissioned a second lieutenant in Company B of the 6th Michigan Cavalry. He became his brother's aide-de-camp and accompanied him through the last year of the war. Tom Custer distinguished him by winning successfully the brevets of captain, major, and lieutenant colonel, although he was barely 20 years of age when the Civil War ended. He was awarded two Medal of Honors. He was the first soldier to receive the dual honor, one of only four soldiers or sailors to receive the dual honor during the Civil War, and one of just 19 in history. Both actions that earned Custer the Medal of Honor involved capturing Confederate regimental flags, the 2nd North Carolina Cavalry flag at Namunzine Church on April 3, 1865, and again at Sailor's Creek on April 6th, just 3 days later. Such battle flags denoted individual persons or units on the field of battle. The flag symbolized the honor of the regiment. In combat, with the field full of noise and smoke, the soldiers watched their regimental flag, and if it advanced or retreated, they followed. The names of the battles that the regiment participated in were sometimes stitched onto the flag. The loss of a regimental flag was a disgrace to the command. His first award, Custer earned for his actions during the Battle of Namunzine Church, among the Union forces charging Confederate brigades, Custer had his horse leap a barricade while coming under fire. The Confederates fell back in confusion before him while he saw a color barrier. Racing towards, he seized the flag of the 2nd North Cavalry from the bearer and commanded those around him to surrender. He took three officers and 11 enlisted men prisoner and took them behind the Federal column and requisitioned another horse as his had been shot in the charge. His second award. Similar actions in the Battle of Sailor's Creek resulted in Custer being the first American soldier to receive the two Medal of Honor. Riding along Colonel Charles E. Capehart, with the command to charge was given, he raced his horse toward the enemy barricades through a line of rifle fire, then leapt the barricade, just like he did before, to be surrounded by the enemy. He discharged his pistols in both directions, scattering the enemy. He noticed Confederates attempting to make a new battle line and saw the color barrier they were rallying to. He charged the color barrier, and Colonel Capehart reported the rest of the events in a letter to Libby Custer. I saw your brother capture his second flag. It was in a charge made by my brigade at Sailor's Creek against General Ewell's corps. Having crossed the line of temporary works on the flank road, we were confronted by a supporting line. It was from the second line that he wrested the colors single-handed and only a few paces to my right. As he approached the colors, he received a shot in the face, which knocked him back on his horse. But in a moment, he was upright in his saddle. Reaching out his right arm, he grasped the flag while the color bearer reeled. The bullet from Tom's revolver must have pierced his heart. As he was falling, Captain Custer wrenched the standard from his grasp and bore it away in triumph. Pictures taken shortly after the battle show a scar with minor soft tissue damage to his lower jaw, extending to a point just below the right ear. Though the wound to Tom's face was, of course, and blood-rich tissue, and covered him in his own blood, Had the bullet gone through the mouth or the soft tissue of the neck, it would have struck a major vessel and killed him. Having captured the flag, Custer held it aloft and rode back to the Union column. An officer of the 3rd New Jersey Cavalry, seeing Custer ride back with the banner flapping, tried to warn him that he might be shot by his own side. "For God's sake, Tom, furl that flag or they'll fire on you." Custer ignored him and kept riding towards his brother Armstrong's personal battle flag and handed the captured flag to one of Armstrong's aides while declaring, "Armstrong, the damned rebels shot me, but I got my flag." Custer then turned his horse to rejoin the battle. But Armstrong, who was only seconds before seen another of his aides shot in the face and fall from his horse dead, ordered his brother to report to the surgeon. Tom ignored the order, and his brother, General Custer, placed him under arrest, ordering him to the rear guard. Later on, in the Indian Wars, he was appointed first lieutenant in the 7th Cavalry in 1866. He was wounded in the Washita campaign of the Indian Wars in 1868. He later served in the reconstruction duty in South Carolina and participated in the Yellowstone Expedition of 1873, where he fought in the Battle of Hung Singer Bluff and the Black Hills Expedition of 1874. He was appointed captain in 1875 and given the command of Company C of the 7th Cavalry. In 1874, at the Standing Trading Post at Standing Rock Agency, he participated in the arrest of Lokita, rain in the face, for the 1873 murder of Dr. Hung Singer. During the Battle of 1876 in Little Bighorn in the campaign of the Black Hills War, he served as an aide-de-camp to his brother, Lieutenant Colonel George A. Custer, and died with his brother. Lieutenant Henry Harrington actually led the company C during the battle. The younger brother, Boston Custer, also died in the fighting, as did Custer's relatives and friends. And it was said that in the battle, he was died alongside his brother. It was widely rumored that Rain in the Face, who had escaped from captivity after being arrested by Thomas, was a participant of the Little Bighorn, had cut out Tom Custer's heart and eaten it in revenge. Years later, Rain in the Face denied such an action, stating, "I wouldn't eat a white man's stinking heart." Like the others in the battlefield, a marble marker rests at the approximate place where his body was found. Tom and General Custer's markers are next to each other on left Stand Hill. The general died a little higher on the hill near the monument. Some say they were buried in the same battlefield grave. Tom Custer was exhumed and the next year reburied at Fort Leavenworth National Cemetery. It's a shame that Thomas Ward Custer is such a forgotten hero. His bravery in battle possibly even exceeded his older brother George. The general himself would state often that it was Tom who should have been the general, not himself. I would love to see a biography or a motion picture about Tom, although I think in today's politically correct climate, it will never happen. America doesn't seem to care about heroes like Tom Custer anymore. To read a book may pull them away from some TV reality show and drivel. We dedicate this show to the brave men and women, to the forgotten men and women who have served this country from the Revolutionary War to today. And we can never say thank you enough. To them, we dedicate this song, My Name is America, by Todd Allen Herndon. We say thank you to all of the men and women in the military and in first responders, be they law enforcement or emergency. God bless you. Never say thank you.
Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend, because my name is America. I stand for my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand for.
Allen Herndon, My Name is America. You can download that at toddallenherndon.com or enjoy it up on YouTube. Mike, we got an exciting guest. She's been here before, and I love repeat performances because they always get better and better. Shall we give a warm welcome to Miss Sherry Few? Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Annie. Glad to be on today.
And I got my co-host here, Cool Mike.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Hey, great to have you back.
Thanks.
All right. Now, I'm always saying you are the definitive authority on Common Core, and you currently are running for office here in South Carolina for the state school superintendent. And you got yourself a really busy field. There's 12 people running?
There are 12 candidates in the race, but only eight, if that's an only eight Republicans. So that does narrow the primary field down, and the primary is just 2 weeks away, so, you know, the primary is really, you know, looked at as the election in this race because it's thought to be a Republican year in the general, so there's a lot of attention on the primary.
Yeah, now, I was reading up in the Post and Courier, and, of course, because it's an off year and it is a primary, we do expect very, very light turnout, and our primary is June 10th. Is anyone really paying attention to this race?
Well, I believe they are, and, you know, it's because of the Common Core standards, and as you indicated, you know, in your introduction, I have led the fight against the Common Core standards, and that's the whole reason I'm in this race. You know, for the last year and a half, I have dedicated my time and resources personally and have, you know, done everything I could to get us to the point where we are, which is a successful point. You know, when we started this fight a year and a half ago, we were told there was no way we could win this battle. And what has happened is we have passed a bill through both bodies of our legislature, and it's on its way to the governor's desk to be signed into law. And what that bill does is it gets us out of the Common Core test totally. We are out of the federally owned Common Core data pipeline, and it'll put it in the hands of the next superintendent of education to rewrite the standards. So that's why this election is so important, is because if we're not careful, if we don't elect the right superintendent of education, we are going to end up just like Indiana with Common Core standards under a different name. They had parent activists like myself in Indiana that worked tirelessly to get a bill through very similar to ours, and then it was kicked back to the Department of Education to rewrite the standards, and they basically just did some repackaging and rebranded them as their own and put them right back out, which was extremely frustrating, as you can imagine, to those parent activists that worked so hard.
Now, doing my research last night, I told you I had just gotten back from Florida, and I had very, very limited Internet access, so going on to check mail or anything like that had to be very short. So I wasn't exactly following the news. Matter of fact, I did not even have a TV or radio. So anyone that's gone a week silent would know how frustrating that is. But I made a note about that legislation because I thought that had not gone through the House, but that has passed now the House?
Yes, it did pass out of the House last week. I think it was on Tuesday. So we had a big celebration. So, yes, and we're just waiting now on the governor to sign it. And, of course, she has indicated that she would sign it. So it's just a formality at this point.
Oh, fantastic. Because I know a lot of people are really fighting for that. And one of our fears was is that the superintendent would have been cut out of any influence over, you know, what goes on.
Well, you know, there was a lot of rumors about that. And, you know, I think in part that was to try to undermine my candidacy. You know, we've got seven other candidates in this Republican primary that have tried to undercut the value of this legislation. And the fact of the matter is Senator Larry Grooms, who has coincidentally also endorsed my candidacy, you know, not coincidentally, he did so because he trusts me to do the rewrite in a way that's necessary to reflect our state's values, you know, to do the job right. So Senator Larry Grooms made an amendment to the legislation that would require the next superintendent of education to be in charge of rewriting the standards. So, you know, I was involved with helping to, you know, steer that process. And, you know, it was a very fluid process right up until the end. We weren't sure, you know, which bill it would be attached to and what language would fly, but ultimately it passed the Senate unanimously, which was just nearly a miracle. I mean, all the Democrats even voted in favor of it. But, yes, the bill clearly does put it in the hands of the next superintendent of education to finish the job.
Oh, wow. That is absolutely fantastic. Like I said, I was
asking. Help me here. I don't understand. You know, come on now. I mean, we all need common standards. The government knows what's best for us. I mean, parents can't feed our kids, let alone educate them. Come on now. Indoctrinate them. Follow the marching orders of, you know, people like Obama.
Well, you know, that's fundamentally what it's all about, Mike. And that's the thing also that the other candidates refuse to talk about in this race. I'm the only candidate that has said the only good thing that has come from Common Core is that parents and taxpayers have woken up to what's really happening in what's being taught and being funded with their tax dollars in public school classrooms, which is literally anti-American and a very liberal bias. And for those of us who are Christian, we're pretty upset that it's anti-Christian. You know, it's pro every other form of religion, but Christianity is painted as a very bad thing. And, you know, we're fed up with it, and that's the only good thing that's come from Common Core. You know, we've seen the movement across the country, and we need to capitalize on that movement. And that's why the next pledge that I have in my platform after finishing the job of stopping Common Core is that I plan to convene a task force that's going to review every textbook that's been adopted in South Carolina, and we're going to expose all the falsehoods and the bias therein. And we're going to take the same fight that we took with Common Core to the legislature, and we're going to put a stop to it.
We have, in Michigan alone, we have 21 challenges, 18 to incumbents in the Republican primary. All 18 who are challenging the incumbents say two reasons, their main reasons for them challenging your standard GOP candidates. Number one is the Medicaid expansion. Number two, Common Core. I mean, it's everywhere. It's spreading, which is a great thing. We need people like you and many others. We need them to tell mothers and fathers exactly. This is pure indoctrination.
Yes, and it is a good thing. I also have the endorsement of the national organization Eagle Forum and Family Research Council. And Eagle Forum, if you're not familiar, is led by Phyllis Schlafly, and she is seen as one of the strongest still living conservative leaders of our country. And she led the fight back in the 60s against the Equal Rights Amendment, and she told me personally that this Common Core grassroots movement is as strong as she's seen since the ERA movement in her time. So, it is definitely something that is encouraging, because I've talked about this liberal indoctrination issue for the last 10 years, and people didn't pay me any attention, and I was, just dismissed and not taken seriously. But because of Common Core, now people are getting it. And I get parents who send me examples from textbooks and worksheets in these public schools in South Carolina. They send them to me on a regular basis. So it's blatantly there, and I have plenty of examples to back up what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's funny because I had read an article that Pam Geller wrote, up in Atlas Shrugged. And she went and picked up her daughter from school, and her daughter blurts out, I forget how old her daughter is, young kid, Allah Akbar, Allah is great, God is great. And Pam Geller, Atlas Shrugged, and she just was completely floored and found out that part of the curriculum was to teach Islam to the kids.
Mm.
Not Christianity, but teach Islam, and here these kids are going home mimicking these things. But part of Common Core is teaching you that mommy and daddy are dumb, and you have to teach them.
Well, yes, it does put mom and dad in a position that makes them appear to be ignorant, especially with the math standards. They're teaching four new ways to do math. It's not good enough that the algorithms that we learned and put men on the moon and created several Pulitzer Prize winners, that's not good enough for the children of this generation. They have four new methods of teaching children to do math, and parents can't help their children with their homework. So parents do appear to be stupid. They actually have tutoring programs for parents to help their children with their homework. How absurd is that?
Someone showed me a problem on Common Core, and I looked at it, and I just couldn't understand, why, simply doing the basic math that you and I learned would make the answer wrong. And then I saw a video of a mother explaining it and how she had to take 81 different steps to come up with an answer that I would say majority of us that are our age can do in our head within a split second.
That's right. And for the child whose parent wants to teach them the simple methods that we learned, thinking at home, I'm just going to teach them the right way to do it. Well, that's not going to work for the child, because when they go to take a test, if they're not able to explain how they reach their answer, if they can't show their work showing these, 81 steps like you just explained, then they will only get partial credit. It doesn't matter anymore if the answer is right, if you can't explain it the way they want you to explain it and do the math the way they want you to do it.
It's amazing. But, you know, there's a side effect to this now, because now they're finding more and more children are suffering from anxiety. They're coming home crying. They're saying they don't want to go back to school. And they're being pushed under so much pressure to pass these Common Core tests that it's not teaching the children. All they're doing is teaching them to take these tests, but not preparing them for critical thinking, for abstract thinking, and for common sense.
This is what happens when you have politicians involved, not teachers and parents. I mean, this is exactly the kind of chaos you have. I mean, these people better hope I never become president, because I'll tell you, anyone who supports Common Core, I'm putting them on trial. This is just how can a country as wonderful as us, I mean, just listen to the last 10 minutes of what we're talking about. Can you really believe that this is here? Not only that, a huge percentage of people are trying to push this on our children. My God, why don't we just get them the Kool-Aid from Jim Jones?
Well, you know, it's not even so funny as far, I mean, we're laughing because it is so over the top. But, you know, to think about putting somebody on trial is not so far-fetched. I really see that, you know, a group of parents could potentially file a class action lawsuit against the government for the K-3 standards being developmentally inappropriate. And that's part of what Annie just described in these young children who are anxious and depressed and crying and don't want to go to school. I mean, we hear, you know, lots of cases of this, reports of this. Parents, you know, are calling me and coming out to our forums, and they're describing these symptoms in their children. And, you know, there were 500 early childhood specialists who signed a statement, you know, saying that they were developmentally inappropriate and would cause these kinds of problems. So, you know, it is over the top. It's crazy. For that reason alone, I don't see how anybody can defend the standards.
No, not at all. Not at all. Now, your website, if people want to help you with your campaign, is?
SheriFew.com, and that's spelled SheriFew. SheriFew.com. I'd love to have people go to the website and volunteer to help. We've only got a couple weeks left. We've got people putting out signs all over the state. And the biggest way I could use help is through donations to the campaign, which you can also do on the website.
All right, and you
can do that as we speak.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And we got a couple of people from South Carolina listening in, so I'm glad to see them. So I know my neighbor will get on the website and make a donation. Anyway,
what is the purpose? What is the purpose of this new ass backwards math? I mean, are we going to be somewhere 10 years from now with math that I just don't know about? Or I mean, I don't get this. I don't understand any of this.
Well, you know, I don't understand it either. And you know, they have all these great platitudes that they state, their rationale for these crazy standards. But, you know, fundamentally, I really believe there's a hidden agenda behind it all. And there has been for the last several decades as the federal government has tried to force national standards on states. You know, it goes all the way back to the 80s with George H.W. Bush. And believe it or not, he met with the same groups of people that brought us Common Core recently. He met with the National Governors Association and the Council of Chief State School Officers back in the mid-80s, and they developed a list of goals. At that time, they were just goals, but they morphed into these national set of standards. But people may recognize them as Goals 2000, which was a set of goals that was adopted for the nation. They were supposed to be voluntary. But they were signed into law under Clinton, and then there was another law, School to Work, that came in place after that. And then the third law, Improving America's School Act, made the goals of Goals 2000 mandatory. So those three bills together, which are tied to the Title I funds, which is, you know, that's part of LBJ's Great Society, that's the money for the poor children, for poor school districts. So they tied all of those things to the Title I funds so there'd be strings attached to the money, and that's how they force states to comply. And the compliance mechanism are our standardized tests. So that's the other point that Annie brought up earlier, is that the focus in the classroom has been teaching to tests instead of to children. And that's part of what's destroyed public education, because we don't have learning happening anymore. It's all about teaching to the test. And that's all a part of this bigger agenda of the federal government. And the bigger agenda with School to Work and Goals 2000 and Common Core fits right into it. No Child Left Behind was part of it, too, is this idea of developing a workforce. So it's workforce development rather than academics. So our whole structure for public education has been transformed from an academic model into a workforce development model where the government is trying to control the economy, which is what happened, we know, in the early 1900s in Europe, and we know how scary that was. But that's exactly the path we are headed down. And Republicans have been duped into falling for this because it was the Bushes that led the way. It was George H.W. Bush, and then it was George Bush with No Child Left Behind, and now it's Jeb Bush pushing Common Core. So
yeah,
I'm telling you, this
family,
is a scary
thing.
That
whole family, they're idiots all together.
All right, well, we got some callers. We got some callers, Mike, on the line, and I'm not sure if this one is a troll or not, but we'll bring the person on. Area code 661, you're on the air live with Southern Sense and our guest, Sherry Few, candidate for South Carolina superintendent. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, this is Ben.
Hi, Ben. You have a question?
White power! White power! Fuck the net!
Sorry about that. I was afraid. I was afraid of that. you know you're doing something, and air quotes, right, if you get a troll.
Before we jump to our next caller, let me ask, I have a question for Sherry. Sherry, clearly, do you see more of a state, I don't know what word I'm looking for, but basically where it almost removes parents, school boards, and what from making decisions, and it kind of puts the state basically in the robotical business, doing so with money to the districts, because it just seems like parents and seems like local control is completely removed. And I mean, that was the purpose for developing school boards as it is.
Yes. Well, you know, unfortunately, what's happened with local school boards is in South Carolina in particular, we have a law that requires school boards to undergo training. So when you get elected to a school board, you have to go to this training. And the only sanctioned training provider is the School Boards Association, which is a very liberal organization. So every school board member goes and gets indoctrinated by this organization, and they're told, you know, to just go along with whatever the districts say. And, you know, they're given legislative things that they should support every year so that, you know, they're against school choice, they're against all the conservative reforms. So, you know, and unfortunately in local elections what we find typically is that people vote for, you know, somebody they went to school with or their best friend's daughter, or, you know, and they don't really look at, and most of them are nonpartisan, so we don't really look at it as political. So, you know, it's the system we're using is not effective, and the states are becoming as controlling as the federal government. So we've got the heavy arm of the federal government, and now our state government is also micromanaging the classroom. An example of that, this year in South Carolina, our legislature passed a bill. It's called Read to Succeed, and it's a reading program that is modeled after something from Jeb Bush, of all people, of course, in Florida. And it's going to cost our state about $100 million. It's going to create a whole new level of bureaucracy in the State Department of Ed. It's going to require reading coaches in the classroom, summer reading camps, professional development for teachers. Some of that's unfunded mandates. But, you know, instead of allowing local control, local school districts to make decisions, you know, about what's in the best interest of their students, we've got the state now dictating what happens in the classroom. So the only way out of this, in my opinion, is to institute a voucher system. And that's the third plank of my platform, is that, you know, all the other candidates are talking about all of these government-driven solutions. And we've tried that, and it's not working. South Carolina is at the bottom of the barrel statistically as far as education. We have been for some time. So we've got to get government out of education. That's the solution for learning for South Carolina children. What we need is a voucher system that will allow parents to choose the learning environment that's in the best interest of their children. Let the parents become the consumers, then parents become the accountability factor, and then the free market drives the solutions for education. That's what we need to improve education in South Carolina.
All right, we got another caller, and I do know this person happens to be a little angel. So, Thomas, welcome to Southern Sense, and our guest, Sherry Few. What's your question?
Well, thank you for taking my call, Annie. And Sherry, thank you for your candidacy. I have a new tactic in terms of dealing with the Common Core bureaucracy and everything, but I want your opinion on something, because in my state, Missouri, our Democratic governor just vetoed a bipartisan student transfer bill, which was going to allow poor black and minority students in the unaccredited school districts in our state to transfer to non-religious private schools, you know, because of the non-accreditation. Well, in his vetoing the bill, he made this comment that he believes that all Missouri students should have a chance at quality public education. Those were his words. And Missouri is also a big component for Common Core. Well, recently, you know, everything's been going on in news media about comments that were racist and stuff like that. But Ms. Few, to me, what he did as a Democratic governor, by the encouragement of the NAACP, was one of the most blatantly racist acts that I've ever seen. But he's going to get a free pass. So this is what I propose. We as conservatives, we have a message. And when are we going to not only talk about the reforms, but we have to start exposing the blatantly racist actions of these teachers' unions and their actions, their policies and everything, because as someone who went to school in the Kansas City, Missouri school district, which is the third from the bottom of all school districts in this nation, I got paid to set an English class and got an A for drawing. That's all I did. So I want to know, when you win the election, you get that legislation up, would you consider forwarding a copy of your bill in South Carolina to me so that I could get it to someone, and maybe we in Missouri can adopt the same type of legislation that you're doing, because what you're talking about is common sense. Unfortunately, we have a lot of moderate Republicans in Missouri who are not bold enough to take the initiative that you're taking.
Well, yes, of course, I'd be more than glad to send you our bill that passed, and then you can use it as model legislation in your state. In fact, we'd be glad to help you with that. In addition to that, in response to what your governor did and the rationale that he used, I would say, first of all, his rationale is totally unfounded, because he suggested that every child is, I forget how you phrased it, but should have a access, I guess, to a quality education. Well, the problem is they're not getting a quality.
He said quality public education.
Right. Exactly.
And specifically public.
Right. But the problem is they are not getting a quality education in public education. Isn't that right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So therein lies the problem, and that's how it should be responded to. Now, as far as it being racist, I do believe we have a similar scenario here in South Carolina. We have failing school districts in our state. One is so bad that the state has been considering going in and taking it over. In fact, residents in that community are begging the state to come in and take it over. And, you know, I don't think that's such a great idea either because I support local control. But in most of these failing school districts, we have high minority populations. And in most of those areas, the white parents have chosen private schools. So the schools are like, you know, 95% African American. And it's, you know, of course, African Americans are equally as capable as white students for learning. It's just that they have a very bad school structure there. And I think that there's some bad family structures as well. You know, there's a lot of single parenting. Some kids aren't even being raised by a parent. It may be a grandparent or someone else. So there's a lot of issues that point to why there's poor academic achievement in those areas. And our current governor thinks the solution is to give them more money, and that's clearly not the solution because those districts are already spending more per pupil than any other district in the state. So this is where I again say the solution is with a voucher program, because if we institute a voucher program, I think particularly in those areas, the free market is going to create an opportunity for private schools. There's going to be a market for schools, and I could see churches in those areas starting schools. And I believe those children, you know, many of them that, and it's not to say that single parents don't have, you know, good moral foundation, but in a lot of cases, when kids are raised in single-parent homes, they don't have that solid moral foundation that they need. And I think that they can find that in a good Christian school. So, first of all, the voucher system would save us money because we're spending up to $17,000 per pupil in those school districts, whereas a good private school would only cost maybe $6,500 a student. And that's what a voucher would allow. So I really think the solution for South Carolina or Missouri or wherever we are for minority students who are trapped in these failing schools is to allow the free market to work, allow parents to have choices, because I believe all parents love their children. I think too often teachers and administrators try to blame parents for poor outcomes in the classroom. You know, especially in these minority, high minority, single parent type situations. But I believe that if they were treated better, I think if parents were treated more like consumers rather than the way I was treated when my kids are in public school, I was treated as though I couldn't possibly know what was in the best interest of my children and their teachers, and they know far more than I could ever know. That's the way I was treated. So I can imagine, you know, how they might also have been treated. So treat parents better, treat them like consumers, and let the free market work. And I think, again, this is our solution to the problems in these areas.
All right, before I bring on the next caller, I have a question because it's something that has occurred here in Beaufort County that has a lot of us extremely upset. The school board, as is autonomous, it decided it was going to take $2 million of the taxpayer money that's supposed to be going into education and use it to help a Low Country Economic Alliance to purchase or to promote business property, and saying they need the jobs for the students, and that's their excuse. Instead of using that money for the students, they're using it to decide what businesses should come to the county and where they should open. And they're using that for economic development instead of childhood development. As a supervisor, would be there something there that you could do to prevent something like this from happening?
Well, Annie, that is just crazy. And see, this is the nonsensical thinking that is happening among educators. Well, I'll say administrators, because you know, there's some really good teachers out there, and they're just doing their job. But on the administrative level and the school board level, they really have this mindset that it is their job to create a workforce and to control the economy. I don't know how we got so far down that road, But you know, most of the candidates in my race, even that's what they all talk about, is preparing children for the workforce and this idea of workforce development. So somehow this local school board, I guess, has it in their mind that they're going to take it even a step further and create jobs for children coming out of school. That is over the top. And I would say that the first thing needs to happen would be for your local legislators to put a stop to that school board being autonomous. I mean, that is a classic example of abuse, and that should be good foundation for them to make that happen. And I think that is in the purview of your legislature. Isn't Tom Davis your senator?
Well, actually, the county is split. We have Tom Davis for one part and Chip Campson on the other, and they're both equally good.
Yeah, they're both strong conservatives, so they ought to put a stop to that. I mean, because I think it's fully within their purview to take away the financial autonomy of the school board, especially if they've, you know, violated their authority like this. That would be the first thing I would recommend. And then beyond that, you know, on the local level, it's just so important to, you know, be involved with local school board races. When I went down to Jasper County for a candidate forum early on, the citizens down there were upset with me because I would not support the idea of the state coming in and taking over their school district. And I just don't think that's the solution.
All right. Let's bring on our other caller here. He also is a BTR host like Thomas is. Jason from the Miller Report. Good afternoon, Jason.
Good afternoon. I love what you're doing over there in South Carolina, Sherry. I just wish our politicians over here in the state of California would be following the same thing that you guys are doing over there in South Carolina. So good for you for doing that. A couple questions for you. I don't know if you've seen in the past 24 hours. I'm sure you're very familiar with Dr. Sandra Stowski. She's been a staunch opponent of Common Core. And I was wondering if you saw in the past 24 hours, she wrote an article for Breitbart.com, and that article has now been banned on Facebook due to security reasons. I'd like to get your comments on that. Also, want to get your comments, since you are going to be a school superintendent, you do handle, one of your responsibilities will be handling the lunch programs. What is your comments about First Lady Michelle Obama's lunch program, and she's moving to quell a revolt of people who are standing up against her for her bad lunch program? That's my opinion.
Oh, goodness. Well, it's kind of interesting to learn that Facebook has banned the Stotsky article. I was actually just reading it a few minutes ago. It's titled that's the one on technology. I was interested because Pioneer Institute published it, and they've got a new study out on technology, which is really good, too, by the way. Let's see. The Stotsky article is titled "States Should Adopt Standalone Teacher Licensure Test in Reading Link to Common Core." And I was reading through it, and it's pretty interesting. I know that Professor Stotsky is very concerned about the ELA standards in Common Core, and you know, she's been much like myself, spending the last year and a half of her life or more fighting the standards. She's an expert. She's probably the nation's foremost expert on ELA standards. She wrote the ELA standards for Massachusetts, which were proven to be the best in the country before Common Core, because on SAT scores in Massachusetts, their students were number one in the country for a couple years in a row based on those standards on the ELA. So, you know, they had these proven effective, really great standards, and Massachusetts even dumped them for Common Core, believe it or not. But her new article talks about requiring a special license for teachers, ELA, particularly reading teachers. So I haven't really read through it carefully to see what she's recommending, but because I esteem her so highly, I'm sure it's a good recommendation, and it's probably a counter to the problems that teachers are going to be facing. Because, you know, we have faulty standards, and they're developmentally inappropriate, and especially if you think about reading in the K through 3 grades. Those standards are developmentally inappropriate. They are like 50% informational text, which means you're taking stories away from children. And that's the age when you're trying to foster a love of reading in children, and yet you're giving them dry, boring technical documents which, you know, can't possibly foster a love for reading. So, you know, teachers, reading teachers in particular, are going to be really, really struggling under these standards. So I think this is probably an attempt on behalf of Professor Stotsky to try to help the teachers to deal with this, because, you know, 45 states have adopted these standards and they're implementing them. And even though many of the states are trying to get out of them, there hasn't been great success thus far. I mean, South Carolina could be the first state to do it right, but it would take electing me as superintendent, and then it will take a whole year to rewrite and adopt the new standards, so it's even down the road. So it sounds like to me that's what Professor Stotsky is doing with this new article she's published. Now, as far as the lunch program, you know, I'll have to tell you the truth. I have not thought much about that at all. I've been so focused on these three areas of my platform, I haven't given that a lot of thought. But it's interesting that you brought that up.
Well, you know, that was a great question, because tonight you've got a debate with the seven other candidates. It's going to be on SCETV from 7 to 8 p.m., and being hosted and sponsored by the several different newspapers, the State, Greenville News, My Beaufort Gazette, Island Packet, the Sun News of Myrtle Beach, the Herald of Rock Hill, and the Item of Sumter. So that is a good question and gives you something to think about in case it pops up tonight.
Yeah, well, I guess it could pop up, but we've got some other issues in South Carolina, I think, that are probably more pressing. The show is only an hour long, and with eight candidates, 1 minute each, I figure we might get to six or seven questions and kind of have a good idea what those probably will be.
Now, one of the Democratic candidates came up with an idea that I actually almost fell on the floor laughing when I was reading it last night. They want to legalize pot to help fund education.
That's right, yes. I think her name is Gallagher. Yes, interesting. Like, it wasn't bad enough that we had an education lottery. They call that a sin tax, you know, to fund education. That was supposed to be the silver bullet. If you remember back when we passed the lottery, that was supposed to cure everything in education. And, of course, years before that, it was the penny on the, was it the gasoline or the sales tax, whatever. We got a penny tax, and that was supposed to be the solution. And I heard, I was listening to the Democrat debate, and that question came up. You know, ETV did a debate for the Democrat candidates last week, and I thought some of her opponents made a pretty good point as far as, you know, the schools are, you know, still doing programs to try to prevent drug use and abuse, and here she is advocating that we actually fund education through that. So, yeah, it's pretty liberal, isn't it?
I also think this is ridiculous. As we see places legalizing marijuana, whatever, that's a state right. But all of a sudden everyone's like, well, tax it now, tax it now. When are we going to have something that's not taxed? I mean, other than air. Good God, tax it, tax it. This is going to fund this. This is going to fund that. I have come to a conclusion, Sherry, that sometimes when you make deals with government regarding taxes, we'll lower this, we want to raise it, that somehow they just find a way to get both hands in your pockets. That's all such a scam.
Yeah, and really the issue here is that there is plenty of money in education already. We've increased education spending by 300% over the last 20 years, and we've seen nothing as far as, you know, an incline in academic achievement. We've been totally stagnant. So we've seen nothing on that huge investment that we've already made. So obviously money is not the solution.
Here in Michigan, no. I can say I've not found one teacher that's in favor of Common Core. I mean, I purposely am looking for a teacher that says, yes, I like it. I've not found one.
Well, you know, in South Carolina, several teachers talked to us off the record, but no one, well, I can't say no one. We have one teacher in the Lowcountry that speaks out, but he's retiring next year. But teachers are afraid to speak out. And I think that's another problem with our system is that, you know, parents and teachers are the two most important ingredients in a child's education, and yet their input is the least valued and the least sought after. And not only that, teachers are afraid to speak up. So, you know, we're really hurting ourselves by not having a better system. And you know, in South Carolina, it's been parents and taxpayers that have led the fight against Common Core. And, you know, it just seems like there's a disconnect between the decision makers and the parents and the taxpayers. It's like they're on totally different ends of the spectrum on this issue.
Yeah, that's true. And now in South Carolina, we don't have unions. And my local school district is not unionized. But I have a friend of mine, a very dear special friend, that she's a teacher. And she told me flat out, we were ordered not to talk about Common Core. And then, you know, off the record, of course, telling us about the crazy training that they have to go through that makes absolutely no sense, and the hours and hours of lost time. And a matter of fact, I think it's something like between 60 to 82 million South Carolina school districts have spent just to adhere with the first year of Common Core. Do I have those figures right?
Well, you know, I've seen some figures like that, but I think that those are dollars that would have been spent anyway, because that was part of the argument that was used to try to keep Common Core, you know, because we've already invested a lot of money. There is money budgeted annually for staff development. So, you know, that's probably staff development dollars and maybe textbook money that would have been spent anyway. It was already a part of the annual budget. So, you know, however, as a teacher, if I were a teacher, I'm sure I'd be frustrated. I'd be frustrated when they adopted Common Core because we had just adopted new standards 2 years prior. So, you know, every time, you know, we've got the latest federal fad that comes along, you know, teachers do the training and you know, get prepared to do what they need to do in the classroom and get, you know, comfortable with it, and then the next fad comes along. So that part of it has to be frustrating for teachers.
Yeah, now we're getting comments posted in the chat room about different organizations that are now opposing Common Core, the New York Teachers Union. New York Times just had a recent article. Oklahoma lawmakers repeal Common Core standards. Illinois School Board, Chicago Teachers Union. They're finally getting the idea, but it's taken so long. You know, why has it taken so long for anyone to wake up to it? Is it maybe because it's not a sexy enough newsworthy item, or just because government is now teaching our kids, we've abrogated our responsibilities and no longer feel like we need to pay attention to it?
Well, I think through the implementation, people are recognizing the problems. You know, the standards were phased in incrementally, so I think the full implementation was supposed to occur next year. So, you know, it's been different levels of implementation, you know, in different districts around our state and even probably differently around the country. So as it phased in and became fully implemented, I think we saw the full impact of the problems. And I think that's why, you know, in the last year, we've seen this revolt, because we've seen the full impact once it's been fully implemented.
Now,
I have a question for follow-up on there. Let's say, all right, you are now, you've won the election. You are going to have a shitstorm of Common Core people coming after you. So how are you going to approach when, you know, one of those Common Core fat cats puts their arm around you and says, Sherry, let me show you how we do things around here.
that's kind of cute. I'm trying to envision that. well, I will not respond favorably, obviously. I mean, my reputation is one that I do not compromise my principles for any cost. And I actually am criticized for that, even as a candidate. The other candidates like to talk about, you know, how they can get along with people and how they can reach across the aisle and all sorts of, you know, things like that. But I have a strong reputation of standing on what is right. And I will not compromise, and I will not cower regardless. So there is no amount of money or any type of persuasion that would persuade me off of my principles.
Amen. Amen. I got to register to vote in South Carolina.
And vote often. Now, Mika Childs made a statement that really threw me because she actually said, quote, "I don't believe all federal money is evil." But isn't it really? When you think about it, there's always a string attached.
Well, yes, I would definitely differ with Mika Childs or Sharmika. I've always known her as Sharmika. I don't know why all of a sudden she's Mika. But anyway, I've always differed. I definitely differ with her on that, and I differ with her on many issues. The federal government has no business in South Carolina's education. You know, the federal government has no business in our state regardless, in my opinion. There are certain things we know in the Constitution that are assigned to the federal government as responsibilities. The rest are left to the states. And you know that because you guys are very conservative and uphold the Constitution, and that's what you're all about. So I'm preaching to the choir here. You know, and actually I've been criticized in some regard, though, for having a position like that because I run a nonprofit organization that has received federal grants for abstinence education. Now, these are grants that we applied for with our nonprofit organization to provide services, you know, in our state to train public school teachers, to teach children to abstain from sexual activity until married. So there are grants out there that I think are worthy of applying for. They are competitive in nature. You know, when we apply for them, there's hundreds of people across the country that compete for them. And if I don't apply for them, somebody else is going to get the funding. So as long as they're available and they're you know, trying to promote something that is conservative and will actually ultimately help in the long run with, you know, the financial burden of children being born out of wedlock and the cost of sexually transmitted diseases, to me it's a very fundamental issue, and that's why I'm involved with abstinence education. So, you know, I want to be forthcoming in saying that in addition to my criticism of Sharmika's Child's position. But when it comes to the State Department of Education accepting federal funds that obligate the state to do things like standardized tests, I'm just totally opposed to that.
I know that you got to go and run in a few moments to prep for your debate tonight, and I wish you a lot of good luck for you. You know, I'll be saying a couple of prayers for you while I watch it on TV. One last question I want to give you is, what can you do as a school superintendent about the quality of teachers? Because, again, from my friend, I hear that some teachers are allowed to slide and their work gets pushed off onto others. What can we do about that?
Well, I think that our current system, you know, in our state is that we pay teachers the same. You know, it's all based on their years of service and the number of degrees that they have rather than their performance. And obviously that needs to change. So we should have a better a merit pay-based system that will pay a teacher regardless. You know, we can have a young teacher that's doing an excellent job getting paid less than a teacher that has seniority, and yet we may lose that teacher, you know, if she's not getting treated as though her work is valued. So, you know, I think it should be handled more like the free market does with business and, you know, awarding teachers who do a good job and getting rid of teachers who aren't doing their job. So, you know, here again, I think that's where we need to get government out of the education business because government doesn't operate that way. And, you know, we have trusted government to the education of our children for far too long. And we've gotten to the point where we can't trust government to do anything well. And it's high time that we recognize that, you know, half of our state budget and nearly a third of the federal budget is spent on education. And, you know, we've got to change the way we do this. And if we get government out of the way and let the free market work, then teachers can be hired and fired and paid according to the free market based on providing a good product.
Or they can simply be hired and paid whatever the local residents and school districts decide on without state interference from their state capital or D.C. I think you're so right. Sherry, I'm going to tell you today, you let them know who's boss up there on the stage. You don't take no crap from anyone. Let them know Sherry F. is in town.
All right. I thank you for that encouragement. I plan to do just that.
One final question as we go. Where do you see the future? Let's jump to say the next presidential election. If we're not successful in repealing Common Core, where do you see us going with the next president?
Well, do you mean who do I think would be a good next president?
Well, this way. Who is our seeing the fact that we're up against it, if we are not successful, yes, mm-hmm. who do you see as a president who would have a good domino effect to basically say we're getting out at an eraser and we're going to start erasing?
Well, obviously not Jeb Bush or Chris Christie. I mean, both of them are pro. Chris Christie and Jeb Bush are pro Common Core. So, and you know, any potential presidential candidate that's been a governor that's been weak on this issue needs to be crossed off the list. Because and we've seen some really good potential candidates that have been crossed off my list because of that. People that I looked at previously that were considered potential candidates. So. You know, that's what we need to do is we need to look at their record. And believe me, governors all over the country missed an opportunity this year to do something about Common Core and set themselves up to be an ideal candidate. And in fact, in our very state, I believe our governor has those kinds of aspirations. And we tried to talk to her about the fact that this could really be a feather in her cap for national aspirations. But she wasn't even willing to meet with us. And, you know, she's got her own difficult gubernatorial race, and I guess that's why. But I think it was a mistake. And I think that's the case with many governors across the country, including Mike Pence, you know, with the debacle in Indiana. So it would be, you know, it would be incumbent upon us to look at their record, look at what they did in their state. Were they willing to stand up to the federal government? Because in a lot of cases, the federal government is threatening Title I funds to states that don't comply with Common Core. And those governors need to stand up. Many of them have the power to do executive orders to get them out of Common Core. That could have been done in many cases. So we need to see who has done all that they can do. And there are some that are doing things now. I think there are some worthy candidates, but it's really too early for me to say right now.
Also, I just posted in the chat room you're scheduled tomorrow morning. I'm going to help you with scheduling because you probably forgot. You are scheduled for the Rick Driver show at 10 or at 9:30 in the morning on AM 12:30. So, and I'm putting up the live stream. You know, give it to them tonight. Give it to them. Let them know who the boss is.
All right. Thank you, Sherry, Mike. I'll do that.
Send my love over to your husband, Marty.
All right, I will. Thanks, Annie. Appreciate being on today.
All right,
good
God
to
bless.
Have you back,
night.
As always.
Yes, good
all right.
Night.
As always. Yes, and we can say now, I'm sending my donation, we are officially sponsoring the Sherry Feud campaign. Yes, we're very biased here, at least I am. But Sherry Feud, you know, Annie, we need more Sherrys, more Annies, and more cool mics.
She's got a powerful teammate there with her husband, Marty, and I'm wishing her all the best. And, you know, like I said, I'm going to be tuning in tonight. I'm going to have to watch online because I've got DirecTV, so we don't have the ETV on our satellite. So I'm going to have to make
send
sure.
Send me
that
link so I can send me the link so I can watch it, too. I always enjoy yelling and screaming at the television.
Yeah, matter of fact, I got to remember to send that link to my Tea Party members. Like I said, I was out of town all last week and had limited internet access. Matter of fact, I had to use my cell phone as my hotspot, and I ended up having to buy like about $60 worth of extra minutes just to check my emails. So I'm a little behind the time here, but I'm catching up awfully fast. Hey, listen,
good.
You know, you were talking about. Me being involved with the county sales tax here that we're fighting here. in South Carolina. And one of the things I didn't get to tell you is that there's a committee of people from our county, all different Republican and conservative groups, that decided to get together and form our own nonprofit group or whatever. I don't know how they're going to be working because I wasn't able to go to the meeting. I was driving down to Florida. Well, guess who their public spokesperson has been elected? Who they elected their public spokesperson? The person to put out all the PR.
Let me guess. I'm afraid to guess in case I get it right. Go ahead, tell me.
They elected me because they called me. They put me on a conference call, and because the background was all noisy, we couldn't stay on too long. But they elected the different officers to represent the group and said, well, we want the public face because you know that you can handle yourself on TV and you can think fast. You're right. And write up the press releases. And they decided that I was the face for it. So here we go again.
Oh,
here we go,
Annie.
Again. Into the breach, folks. Into
so
the breach
how is your county commission race coming along, Annie?
Supposed to be having a debate at the county council. I believe it's May 27th or 29th. I got to double check that date on that. No, today's the 27th, so it's the 29th. Yeah, because they have the school superintendent tonight, and I believe county council will be on Friday. I have to double check that, and it's going to be interesting. I ended up talking to a friend of mine, a fellow Tea Party person, and she was writing an editorial into the newspaper about the candidate, the incumbent who actually dreamed up this mess, and she was writing it saying why we have to kick him out of office. So I gave her a couple of extra facts, and she goes, great. She was able to rewrite it, and she sent it in, so hopefully it'll appear in the paper tomorrow or even Friday just before the debate. That would be excellent. That'll be excellent. And this is what we got to do. We've got to go after them on the grassroots level and show from the bottom up we're cleaning house. We are cleaning house, guys.
Well, good. We need to. You know, I mean, just as we kind of wind down the show with a couple minutes to spare, we were talking earlier about just what's taking place with our veterans. I mean, this is just horrible. And as you said, it's unacceptable. No different than what Sherry has grabbed the baseball bat, and she is leading the charge against Common Core. We need people to do this on all different. You have certain issues that really touch you, and I have mine. Sherry has hers. We need to support those people. Certain issues are close to their heart.
Yeah.
I mean,
now, the thing is, as individuals, we cannot fight all of the battles, but we can choose people who have the knowledge and the skills, like Sherry has, to lead the battle for us. Now, I've been putting up in the website and on our show page her other webpage, which is SCPI, South Carolina Parents Involved in Education, SCPIE.org, and you can check it out. And she's got the entire lowdown on everything Common Core. Who formulated it? Where did it start? Where is it taking us? She also posts various articles from all across the nation about people opposing Common Core or people doing stupid stuff. And it's a great, great website. And this is why, you know, I love her. I wish she would be elected. Mika Childs is good, but, you know, she concerns me when she's not afraid to go after federal dollars. Like Sherry said, a lot of times you're going to have, you know, the carrot and the stick from the federal government, although they do have these grants for nonprofits, but that doesn't always work for the state.
Oh, so, it never works. You know, these people crawled out of a sewer. So the gutter is where we need to fight them, and that simple. They're pushing this agenda, and I mean the idea. Well, I have to be the elder statesman. Oh, blow that out your booty! Good God.
All right, Mike, we're down to our last few minutes, and I do want to play as our closing number The Unknown Soldier by Doug Briney. And again, for those that missed when we announced it earlier, Doug Briney was our guest on Friday, where I was broadcasting from Florida. He's got a new release single called Unknown Soldier. It's up on his website, which is DougBriney.com, D-O-U-G, Doug Briney, B-R-I-N-E-Y.com. And for 99 cents, if you download it between Memorial Day, which just started yesterday, to Labor Day, That 99 cents does not go in his pocket, does not go into anyone else's pocket. It goes directly to veteran charities. So we'll end up closing our show off with that. But before we go, I just want to say something kind of funny, because I sent you pictures from where I was broadcasting from. Couldn't understand.
Oh, interesting.
But I don't know how I was able to get through that show with what I had to look at while I was doing the broadcasting. The woman that's taking over the condo that we had to fix up is a strong, strong Obama supporter. And I counted, I think there was 10 separate pictures of Barack Obama, Michelle, the girls, in all different various, you know, places and Newsweek articles and everything else. She's got this plastered all on the front entranceway to the place. And so, you know, walking in, you're assaulted with everything Obama. And my husband was threatening to take it and put it out in a pile and just burn it. But the woman is so nice. And she's so sweet, and she's got a heart of gold, except for the fact I had to stare at this. Me, a conservative, having to stare at all these pictures surrounding me and trying to warp my brain.
When you were sending me those pictures, for people who don't know, Annie was sending me these pictures on her phone. And I'm trying not to laugh, but I'm just picturing Annie. I always picture Yanni as just a laid-back whatever type. I'm picturing you as just like looking at saying, one wrong move. And I am telling you, bodies are going to be flying out of the window. That picture of Obama, the last one you sent me, was so funny. It was huge. It was almost like the president sitting right next to you. I'm like, oh, man.
She's got pictures of her family up on the refrigerator, but the walls are plastered with Obama. And it's like, oh, God. I'm just glad my father isn't alive to see this, because he would absolutely flip out. Not on
Obama.
My walls.
Obama.
All right, well,
boy.
That said, let me play our exit song today, which is going to be Doug Briney, The Unknown Soldier. And please, please go down to DougBriney.com and download it for the 99 cents. Send it out to all your friends. Tell them to do the same thing, and let's help the vets. Because the VA, some of them are doing a great job, but a lot of them are not, and letting us all down. So we'll be back again on Friday. And, Mike, you have your 6 candidates from Michigan, so we'll have a blast. So, everyone, please be safe out there and join us again Friday. Same bat time, same bat station. And say good night and God bless.
I'm a sentry, and I stand my watch alone.